Welcome, everyone, to a Baseball America College podcast. Along with Jim Schoenert, I'm John Manuel. Mike Lanana is out today. Mike's on the disabled list.
Under the weather.
It did not stop him from taking in some hot AAC action this
weekend.
Can't
keep him out of G-Vegas.
You could not. Apparently not. And no profanity on these G-Vegas uniforms. But we digress. I still can't get over the fact that how some of these schools embrace the Vegas thing, Jim. I get it, but I guess actually I don't get it. So we'll talk Vegas. We'll talk top 25s. We will talk 64-team field. Talk a lot of college baseball today on the Baseball America podcast. As usual, brought to you by Slugger, Louisville Slugger, at Slugger Nation on Instagram. Great way to follow a lot of college baseball happenings on their Instagram. I've got that plugged into my phone. And, of course, you can follow them on Twitter as well, at Slugger Nation. He's at Jim Schoenert, BA. I'm at John Manuel, BA. If you followed us at all this weekend, you know we were both at some ACC action this weekend. But the story in college baseball this weekend, Jim, was a Thursday through Saturday series, Texas A&M and LSU, number one Tigers, number two Aggies. And it lived up to the billing, Jim. Mm-hmm. A lot of compelling baseball on TV this weekend from Baton Rouge. They had some weather mixed in. They had some intensity mixed in. But when the dust settled, the scoring was even over the course of the three games. But the Tigers did what they had to do, Jim, especially a late game, to win two games and to win the series. I guess it really wasn't a surprise, but was there any aspect of the series that surprised you about how LSU won it, or did it kind of play to form for you?
I will say the surprise was that they, just kind of the way, in the two games they won, that they were able to get to the A&M's bullpen, which is,
right. Actually
that was kind of a continuing a trend from that Arkansas series that A&M lost. I mean, their bullpen's been so good all year. Everybody has a bad weekend here and there, but to see LSU be able to come back. I mean, when you figure A&M has a lead after six innings, especially a 5-2 lead, I figure that game's in pretty good shape. I think they'd only lost once all year in that situation. So for the Tigers to come back and win, that's pretty impressive. I mean, I think we saw I wasn't able to watch the entirety of all three games, but it looks like LSU's speed and athleticism was a big difference. And when A&M's an offense that just never quits, so that's why they're staying in those games and they're able to come out and then win that last game. But kind of like you said, I mean, LSU is at home, so you kind of would expect them to win two out of three. So it pretty much went to script, I would say.
The amusing thing for me, Jim, is that we've talked about LSU's aggressiveness. That was the focus of our preseason capsule on the Tigers. Was it's going to be a very young pitching staff, and it's going to be a much more aggressive approach offensively in terms of base running. Excuse me. Both those are still, that's still the theme of their season.
Mm-hmm. They've been who we thought they would be.
They are, you want to crown them. They are Denny Green. They're a Denny Green team. I like to call those teams right now. That's what they are. They had like an 8-game winning streak that got snapped in the finale of that series, but they're not doing it the way you would expect. I mean, Alex Bregman's having a big year, but not as
not
big
biggest,
of a year
yeah.
like we thought he was on track to have. Mm-hmm. You know, he still doesn't strike out very often, but the aggressiveness on the base of the 78 steals as a team, we just saw it in so many little times. I even liked in the ninth inning, or I guess it was in the Friday game, where I forget who it was who got thrown out at second base by Nick Banks, which was one of the better plays I saw all weekend.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Nick Banks just hosed him at
that
second base.
It was a laser.
It absolutely was. Dr. Evil would be proud of that. But the mindset was the right mindset. Mm-hmm. And getting thrown out because Nick Banks makes a perfect play does not mean you don't try it again.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I like about LSU, is that they stayed aggressive. But I like the fact that A&M... if they got punched in the mouth, they came right back up.
They did.
It doesn't mean that they won the game, but there's the spirit of that series was pretty high.
I think that's where you're seeing their veteranness coming through. Just they've got a lot of guys that have been through it. They got a lot of juniors and seniors on that line, and then even like sophomores like Banks and Gideon. Those guys have, they're basically juniors now by this point. So I mean, they've got guys that have been around, and they're not going to be intimidated by going on the road to places like that. They've been in the SEC for a few years now, so it's
right.
They're not going to be cowed by going into Alex Box Stadium.
If you're going to be cowed anywhere, that would be the place for it to happen, and they weren't. I didn't think that's what they didn't lose because of because the moment was too big for them. They didn't lose because the crowd was too much for them. They lost because they lost to a good team that played its best. You know, that was I thought that was a pretty high level series, but that's kind of what you would expect out of a team that is. That's kind of the difference to me between these two teams, is that A&M's a little bit more veteran club. I think LSU's a little more talented team. Mm-hmm. I might even say a lot more talented when mm-hmm. you go.
Yeah, that's been my impression ever since I saw them both in Houston.
Right.
Just on a, you know, I think on a neutral field, I would probably still pick LSU to win a series. But I mean, it's not. It could go either way. Just as we saw this weekend.
That's my impression. But I think that, like you said, that veteran factor is definitely at play for A&M, whether it's Alamond or Nada Brock or some of those guys. They have that little veteran nucleus that really does. I think it did show a little bit this weekend. I like both clubs. I like both clubs as much now as I did before the weekend. You know, I don't. Mm-hmm. There's nothing. Nothing about that weekend kind of scared me off either team. You know, Banks and Bregman are the two bell cows for these two teams. Neither one even had a big series. Mm-hmm. You know, neither one was really a big factor offensively, and yet both teams I thought played really well. So they're both 37-7. They're still ceiling in my mind for both clubs, and I actually feel like A&M has a little more staying power than LSU. And you tell me if you agree or not, because LSU is just so young on the mound. You know, Lang seems like he's just slowing down ever so slightly. Poche's been excellent. I mean, I don't have any question about him. Stallings, Newman, the main guys, Bain, the main guys in this bullpen are somewhat untested. And most of their main pitchers, Jim, have not been through that postseason crucible. Depending on the matchup that LSU gets, I guess I would be more surprised if A&M failed to get to Omaha than I would be by LSU, even though I think LSU is the more talented team. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I can see that. I mean, if LSU gets a veteran type team in a regional, maybe, and if they get behind the eight ball for some reason, you know, that, you know, I mean, they lost at home last year. Houston went in there and beat them. So
exactly.
And I mean, we saw, you know, go back a few years, Stony Brook went in there and won a super regional. So I mean, they're, you know, they're not unbeatable at home in the postseason, much as, you know, it just feels that way. It feels like they should be, but
right.
But so yeah, I mean, if they were to catch some kind of bad break in a regional, you could see them. You know, how would they respond? I think that's a valid question. And A&M, yeah, I think if they were to like lose a game in a regional, I don't think that would bother them too much. I think they would be fine.
I don't think it would faze them as much if they went in the loser's bracket. I think LSU would have the emotion at home to play back through it, that kind of thing. I mean, Palminieri knows what he's doing. Alan Dunn and Andy Cannizzaro know what they're doing. I do trust, Alan Dunn. I definitely trust Coach Dunn as a pitching coach. And he's done a great job with that staff. And, hey, you know, Jake Godfrey was going south. Mm-hmm. But he's kind of righted him a little bit in those shorter relief roles. Mm-hmm. Number one, he's getting some big outs for them. Number two, it's kind of building his confidence back up. So both parts of that change in their rotation have worked for them. But, you know, they've really found a guy in Austin Bain, Jim, who's really, he's not a flash in the pan. That looks like there's some staying power for him there, too. So I really like their pitching staff's talent. But when you really look at it, it's all underclassmen pretty much getting the job done for them in the mound. If they ran out of gas, I think they're going to have to be careful how they manage that team, especially in the SEC tournament, as to whether or not they're going to be at full strength for a whole month deep into June.
Exactly. Yeah, that was kind of the... I like the quote from Palminieri that I used in the weekend preview, that these are big games, but at the end, it's not, you know, no one's getting a trophy at the end of this series. It's not the, you know, I mean, both these teams are going to be national seeds unless, you know, something catastrophic happens down the stretch here. So, you know, I mean, and they've already kind of been managing Alex Lang's innings. They gave him a week off earlier, you know, a couple weeks back, and then, you know, they kind of worked, I think they limited him to like 80-some pitches, or like when he came back 2 weeks ago. So, I think they'll probably... I mean, the SEC tournament would be a perfect spot to give him another break, to be honest. I mean, that's...
I agree.
I think they're going to certainly see that happen. I mean, that's probably what... Or, you know, give him a, you know, 60-pitch limit or, you know, what have you. So, something like that. But, so yeah, they'll definitely... I'm sure they'll be managing these guys down the stretch when... You know, you can't afford to lose a bunch of series, but they can... So, you can't say they'll put it in cruise control, but they can... You know, they're in good shape. They don't have to... They don't really have anything else to prove.
I agree. That's how I feel about LSU, and I like both clubs. I like them better after seeing them. I love the intensity of that series. I love the crowd at that series. Mm-hmm. I was very impressed. It was a great showcase for college baseball, and both teams showed out for it. You know, both teams, again, I wouldn't say they were at their best, but they were awfully good over the weekend. Now, both those teams, like you said, barring a collapse, are going to be top eight national seeds. Who else from the SEC has a shot to do that, Jim? It feels like last week it was Florida. This week, I guess, it's got to be you have to give advantage to the Commodores. They sweep. Exactly. They really dominated Missouri at home. And where you went into the weekend with a three-way tie atop the SEC East, now you have some stratification. A two-game lead for the Commodores over Florida, which lost to Kentucky. I guess which is more interesting for you to talk about, Vanderbilt's sweep of the Commodore of the Tigers or the Florida's kind of little mini slump losing that weekend series to Kentucky?
Yeah, I'll start with the Vandy-Mizzou series. I mean, that's, you know, we talked about A&M not being cowed going on the road. I mean, you wonder if Mizzou, I mean, that's a young team. You wonder if maybe the moment was a little too much for them going on the road to face the national champs because they've right. won big series, but they've all been at home, beating South Carolina at home, beating Florida. That, I mean, that's still a huge series win, beating Florida. Yeah, I mean, they lost a series at A&M earlier. They did win a game, but yeah, so you wonder if that's a little bit too much for a young team to go on the road and win a series like that. So yeah, and certainly Vandy bouncing back. I mean, they lost two series in a row, so to get back on the right track. I mean, I can't say they're a lock to be a national seed. Their RPI is still outside the top eight, but
right.
it certainly could get up in there. And they still have to play Florida, so if they win that series, that would be another big boost for them, and they're in good shape to win the SEC East. So they certainly could play. They're the next best chance to play their way in for the SEC in Florida.
Boy, that's a tough team
to figure out.
It really is. It's hard to say that a team that's had the kind of year that Florida's had is underachieving, mm-hmm. but for some reason it feels like they could be doing more.
It really does.
It does. You look up and down the lineup, the numbers are allowed for their hitters. Harrison Bader's had a tremendous junior season. I mean, what more could you ask for him? Or Buddy Reed, Dalton Guthrie's been a productive freshman. They got one of the best shortstops in the country, mm-hmm. Richie Martin. They've got a true Friday guy in Logan Shore. Everybody would like to have Logan Shore on Fridays. But with all the talent in that pitching staff, it's just a little odd that they haven't really gotten a run. And, I mean, Kentucky tries to let them back in on Saturday. They got a 7-3 lead.
7-2 going to the ninth.
Yeah, they bring in Kyle Cody to kind of get him an inning with a big lead, and Kyle Cody almost coughs it back up from first-rounder to can't get out of his own way. Yeah. So it's kind of surprising to me that I'm a little surprised. I think I'm being too hard on Florida to say that they're disappointing or underachieving right now. They're 33-12, but it doesn't feel like they're clicking on all cylinders at the very least.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, they've kind of just been. I mean, they had that big series win against Miami, but that's really the best thing they've done. I mean, they lose the series to Ole Miss, who's a borderline regional team. Now they lose the series to Kentucky, who is, you know, outside, you know, on the outside looking in. I'll probably have them in the field this week, but I mean, the South Carolina series
is the one that really sticks out for them. Mm-hmm. But right now, you kind of have to wonder how much of that was them and how much of that was the Gamecocks.
Yeah, at the time, I kind of thought that might have said more about South Carolina than it did about Florida. But obviously, they did go on the road and sweep Mississippi State the week after that. So you thought, well, maybe they're figuring this thing out here. But now you go back and give the momentum right back.
They did. And Missouri, like you said, maybe the moment was too big for them. This is a team that it's obviously been kind of a charmed season for Mizzou. They really tumbled in our rankings this week. We took them all the way from 14 to 20. And I think actually in my first iteration, I had them hit harder. Jim, they're at 51 in the RPI. Does Missouri, I mean, I can't imagine that just this series puts them in danger. But from an RPI standpoint, that Milwaukee series still hurts.
Yeah.
They've got Ole Miss, LSU, and Kentucky left. Obviously, nothing's easy in the SEC. Does Missouri, are they in trouble in any way for a regional bid in your mind? Like, if they were to lose all three of those series, say, you know, would they be in trouble? Is this a team that's got some cushion as far as an at-large bid?
They've got some cushion. I mean, their top 50 record is not very good. They're only right now. There's 5-9 on Warren Nolan here. So that's that's a little bit of a red flag. I think they're around 500 against the top 100. So that, you know, and their road record's okay, and they do check the box of having a marquee series win with that Florida series. But I mean, right. It's, you can't. This really set them back. It really did. I mean, if they can win that Missouri State game this week, and then just take care of Ole Miss, just take care of business at home, take care of Ole Miss and Kentucky. Those are both top 50 RPI teams, so that would give them a nice big boost. So that they should be fine as long as, you know, you win those series. And I mean, if you could win just one game at LSU, I mean, that would give you, even if you lose a series, that would give you a boost right there. Just, you know, just get one game.
It really would. No, that's huge. That would be a big deal in that league. And I want to stick in that division. I mean, Kentucky is the next team in the SEC East, but Jim, the rest of this division is kind of in chaos. Kentucky is a very difficult team to peg, but they have two great series road wins now against LSU and Florida. It feels like they're probably in that. They have Vanderbilt at home next weekend. That would be quite a feather in your cap if you're Kentucky, and you have series wins against Florida, LSU, and if they were able to pull it off, Vanderbilt. It almost seems like Kentucky would go from out of the top 25 to being a regional host. Then they have Georgia and at Missouri. They've got a chance to finish pretty strong with a Louisville midweek game that's going to help their RPI no matter what. And again, this is a team that's doing it, Jim, without the guy who's supposed to be their bell cow really being the guy. I mean, this is really a team that's, until losing that last game, they were on their way to sweeping a couple series in a row. They've always been more of an offensive club. This is not a big power team this year without A.J. Reed. But, what's been the key to Kentucky's success?
It seems like they've been pretty balanced. Like you said, they're not, you know, they lose A.J. Reed, who was so integral to everything they did last year, but they've gotten some young guys to step up. Zach Brown obviously had a great start against Florida, and, you know,
he's been good all year.
He's been really good, yeah. He's, you know, saw you guys really taken off. Kai Tom's been a real steady guy who's contributed in a lot of ways in the middle of that lineup. He's kind of picked up some slack. I think he leads them in steals and in average, if I remember right. And Javon Shelby's really come on as a sophomore. So they've, you know, so they, like I said, they're not a big power team, but they seem like they're pretty balanced.
That's my sense. And then really, you know, I know some of it I'm focusing a little bit more on this weekend, but just seeing Beggs and Dustin Beggs and Zach Brown pitch so well. I mean, they had to go four pitchers deep for the shutout in the opener, which kind of tells you in a way that they really don't have that one guy that they're focused on. But, you know, Dustin Beggs was a guy out of junior college. He was a 17th round pick last year. I remember talking to people about him in Georgia. I think going to their website, he led junior college baseball in strikeouts last year. So to see it, it's not every day that you get a junior college kid who's plugged in and ready to go in a weekend rotation in the SEC. Mm-hmm. But that's what they've done. So I think you have to give Brad Bohannon, their recruiting coordinator, a lot of credit for finding the right kind of guys. Then obviously Coach Henderson for coaching him up. I mean, he's got a long history as a really good pitching coach. And I've never been necessarily in Gary Henderson's camp from his coaching track record there. But this team has some grit, Jim, that's what kind of stands out to me is they don't have that one guy you really peg things to. They'll steal a base when they need to, but they're not an exceptional speed team. They're not an exceptional defensive team. They just kind of grind things out, and they've been fairly, they haven't been overwhelmed by the moment.
Yeah.
It feels like Kentucky is that kind of team, whereas South Carolina, right below them in the standings, probably the most mercurial team in the country.
Yeah, they go.
Lose a series to Tennessee this weekend.
You can't lose a series to Tennessee. Not, you know, you want to be a regional team. Don't lose a series to Tennessee.
Especially they're not going to beat one this year.
It doesn't look that way. I mean, they had their, you know, their circle the wagons moment there against Vandy, where they come back and win that series, and now it's just like we said with Florida, they just give it all right back.
Startling, and then Georgia had just
Georgia wouldn't make the SEC tournament right now.
And I mean, obviously Robert Tyler going down early in the year has been an issue for them all year. You lose. Really, I mean, you could have looked at him as the top guy in the SEC among sophomores, and they haven't had him all year. The other, I guess, teams that are coming on are all the teams in the West right now, Jim. Arkansas and Auburn. These are the other teams that are kind of climbing the ranks in the Southeastern Conference. Auburn's had this great RPI all year, but really they kind of needed a signature, I guess, series. I wouldn't say that sweeping Georgia's a signature series, but just getting to 500 in the league or close to it, just seems like it makes a big difference for Auburn in the way they're perceived.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I've felt pretty good about Auburn's regional chances for a couple weeks now. I mean, with where they are in the RPI, they've been pretty high all year. Now, if they can just get close to 500 in the SEC, they should be in pretty safely. I mean,
you had them as a 3 seed coming into the weekend, but now it seems like you can almost maybe they're it's much more likely for them to be a 2 seed if they're around 500 in the league,
exactly,
than if they're like 13-17, right?
Exactly. Yeah, getting a sweep this weekend is a big help. I mean, you know, when you look at I think their remaining schedule is pretty manageable. And
yeah, South Carolina, Alabama, and then Florida. Now two of the three on the road.
Yeah, so it's, I mean, it's not easy. I mean, obviously there are no easy series in the SEC, as we always say, unless, you know, you could always use maybe a home series against Tennessee, but
right, unfortunately, or a
series,
that's true.
Well, maybe it's a home series against South Carolina, the way they've been going. But yeah, I mean, I think they're in good shape, even if they, I mean, so they're 10-11 right now, so they can just go, you know, 4-5, 5-4, they should be fine. So yeah, they'll make a regional. I think they're in good shape. They've got that's a really young, talented team, and they do have that bell cow in Keegan Thompson, who's, you know, we've heard a lot of good things about him this year and just what he's brought to the rotation, and they've got a lot of young, talented guys in that lineup with, you know, Anthony Greer being the headliner there. But yeah, they'll be in the postseason. I think that's a pretty safe bet.
I like that bet as well. And then Arkansas is another team that's kind of hot, and Ben Attendi, the center fielder, I talked to a scout last week who gave me kind of a James Ramsey comparison, but only he liked Ben Attendi better than James Ramsey. I kind of like that comp myself.
They also comp him to Tim Tebow.
He did not. That's I've gotten Tim Tebow on two college baseball players, James Ramsey and Carson Fulmer. Good remembering by you. Those are my two favorite guys.
So if you wear specs, you get a Tim Tebow comp then.
I don't think they knew about the Tim Tebow comeback comp. Now, we'll have to see if anybody gets comp to Tim Tebow post-Eagles comeback. I didn't want to turn this into first take. But Andrew Benintendi, all of a sudden, this guy's almost in the player of the year. He has to be in the player of the year conversation, Jim. He's kind of put Arkansas on his back. He's hitting .381 now with 14 home runs among the national leaders in home runs. He's got 20 steals. This guy's a chance to be a 2020 guy in this offensive environment. This is a special season, and he's kind of taken a team with a lot of good, solid college players and a rotation where they've kind of figured some things out. They've got a very flighty closer in Zach Jackson, who is he's kind of like a, I don't know, he reminds me of Mitch Williams, not the delivery, but I mean, he's just as apt to walk you as he is to strike you out virtually. But when you go McKinney and Taccolini, and now you get Trey Killian back. I know Killian hasn't been great, but at least they have a lot more shit about their weekend rotation now. It seems like that has kind of helped propel this team to be one of the more steady and, I guess, stealthy teams really in the SEC.
Exactly. I mean, they've won, five straight series now for this taking down Mississippi State. And obviously, you've got that big series that going into College Station and beating A&M that you can kind of peg them to.
Yep.
So, yeah, I mean, they've been coming on strong. It feels like every week we're seeing, you know, Benintendi hitting more home runs and getting all their, you know, the Arkansas Twitter getting the gifts and all that stuff out there. So I mean, it seems like they've really figured things out. I mean, kind of, you know, their pitching's always kind of been their identity the last few years. That's kind of how you always what I kind of always identify them with. But now it's
correct.
I mean, they've turned into a pretty good. They're pretty much an offensive team, feels like, this year.
It is that way, and you know, the thing I like about Jackson, besides the fact that his, you know, the arm's pretty electric, he showed me Friday. I didn't think that he was that. I didn't know he was that kind of guy. I shouldn't say I didn't realize that he was the kind of guy who could go 3 2/3 innings. I didn't think he had that kind of pitchability like he showed Friday, taking over for Killian and kind of wrapping that one up. So this is a team that I'm. The more I find out, the more I research about Arkansas, the better I like them. And you're starting to see now, you know, Mississippi State was going to walk Benintendi if there was any opportunity to not pitch to him. They weren't going to pitch to him. And that's the adjustment Mississippi State made this weekend, allowed them to win the third game of that series. They didn't have to, you know, basically they kept the guys off base ahead of Benintendi, and they could pitch to him when Egan and Serrano were on base. You know, they could pitch to him, and otherwise they were going to try to pitch around him. You just can't let that guy beat you, essentially, is what the rest of the SEC is starting to decide. But, again, when you have a guy who can beat you with his legs as well as his bat, kind of makes things a little bit easier for them. to me, Arkansas, the other key part of this deal is, as well as they're playing, they don't have a lot of margin for error, Jim, and no. they go to Alabama. They got to win that series because their RPI is still in that low 40s. And it goes back to the article we wrote a couple of years ago. They've played HBCUs, and it just seems like it's killed their RPI.
Exactly. And
Eastern Illinois.
And they played a home series with North Dakota to start the year. I mean, yeah. I mean, they're too far out to get a chance to host. I mean, they're got them at 48 here. And
they've got their SEC series remaining are not strong.
They're not
going to
help
RPI
them.
Series.
Not really. Not unless you go 8-1 or something like that. So it's. I mean, they're playing so well, I don't think they're in real danger of missing regionals.
Right.
I mean, unless they start backing up here. But
I think it's reasonable to expect them to go 7-2 down the stretch.
That should be. I mean, yeah, they're sort of 11-10 in the conference. I mean, you get to 17, 18 wins. You're not going to miss regionals, especially in the coming out of the SEC. But I think it's too far, a bridge too far to see them get up there to host.
And that's really a shame, because with that ballpark and their fans...
I saw what it said in an attendance record in one of those games this weekend, right?
Yeah. I mean, so to me, I'd love to see... if they get the 18 wins, I would love to see that team be a regional host.
I mean, if they go deep in the SEC tournament, maybe that would get them up there, but that's probably what it would take.
It really might be what it might take. I agree with you. They have to probably get to 17 or 18 wins in the league, and then maybe win the conference tournament, and you would see this... really, it's a rabid fan base that has earned... I think they've earned some the respect, maybe to the benefit of the doubt, to host a regional. Maybe if they don't have the RPI that you'd maybe would necessarily look for. So I don't know. I really respect the fact that they draw so much, so consistently, and then on the field it feels like they're earning it. You know, so it was 12,589 on Saturday, Jim. That is just. Yeah, that would be a record for the state of North Carolina. We're
exactly.
Based in the Triangle, and when they get that at the ACC tournament, they went berserk, you know. So 8,000 and change the other two games, but a record on Saturday night, and the Natural State comes out for college baseball. I love that that's the nickname of Arkansas, the Natural State. Jim, we were in ACC country this weekend, and I saw North Carolina sweep Boston College, talked about the separate, like we talked about the sweep for Auburn and how it put them close to 500 in the league, and really kind of the fact that they're around 500 probably pushed them to a 2 seed rather than a 3 seed. North Carolina getting a sweep that they kind of needed to get. They get some separation from 500. They move up in our rankings to 22. They give up one run all weekend. It wasn't even earned. So just from how they're playing, they're really playing some of their best. They're pitching as well as they can pitch going into their exam break, which will give Trent Thornton and Trevor Kelly a needed break.
Yeah.
But not a lot of news in that series. You were in much more newsworthy and noteworthy ACC series with North Carolina State and Virginia. And just going into that one, Jimmer, it felt like the winner of that series had a leg up on the loser of that series for being an at-large team. And the loser of that series could be out. Now, I thought that was much more true of NC State. Like, if they lost
exactly.
that series, they were really going to be on the outside looking in. They haven't secured anything, but that was a shocking end on a doubleheader Sunday. I've never been to a doubleheader where both games were walk-offs. Had you
no,
before Sunday?
Never, ever. Can't imagine I ever will again either.
That it was a rare day, and especially rare because NC State won it both on home runs, and neither one was by Logan Ratledge. You know, it was Bubby Riley, a little-used senior outfielder, and there's a good reason he's little-used. He hasn't been very good.
Make contact a lot.
That's it. I don't mean to be harsh on the guy, but he's had a pretty underwhelming college career. He draws a lot of walks, but finally a huge hit for him. And then J-Rod, as they call him on their own Twitter, cousin of Alex Rodriguez, Joe Dunan.
Nephew, Dunan. I think.
Nephew. See, I get it confused.
Yeah.
I was corrected that he was a cousin.
Oh, really? Yeah.
But maybe he is.
I might be wrong.
I'm just going to say relative of Alex Rodriguez, Joe Dunan with a walk-off. Jim, what does this mean for Virginia? Let's start with the Cavaliers. This was a national runner-up a year ago, but they're 27-17. They're 10-4 in the ACC, 10-14, I should say, which on percentage is 10th in the league. They're barely
in
the
ACC
tournament.
They are right on the cut
line
to make the ACC tournament. They're
half game up
on the Hokies.
Who they were swept by. That's right.
So. Obviously, it's not possible for them to finish tied because Virginia Tech has one fewer game. But
unless the Cavaliers get a rain out down the line.
Do, yeah. So, I mean, so Virginia, they're off this weekend for exams. They don't play at all. I mean, maybe they have a midweek.
Yeah, they have a midweek at Old Dominion.
Yeah, they're off this weekend. They don't play. So then they come back next week or week after. They play the home series against Duke. Have to win. Probably would help you to sweep.
Yeah,
would be preferable. I mean, because then they finish at North Carolina, and if they go 3-3, you're 13-17. You're treading on real thin ice. You'd have to go pretty far in the ACC tournament to get in.
I don't think Virginia has missed regionals under Brian O'Connor, has it?
I don't think they have. Unless, I mean, like in his first year, maybe. I don't think so. But I mean, yeah. I mean, the funny thing is, I mean, their RPI is still up there at 33. So all those early season issues where their home games kept getting snowed out and whatnot, and they had to play all those neutral site games down in South Carolina, that's actually helping them now. The fact that they were playing well then and won a bunch of those games, so that's kind of why it's propping up their RPI.
It really is. It's 11 straight, by the way. He's been there. This is his 12th season, 11 mm-hmm. straight regional trips for UVA. So they've never missed under Brian O'Connor.
They're in the danger zone.
They are officially in the danger zone. They are officially in the danger zone. Archer's calling them out. The Wolfpack, meanwhile, Jimmer, this was huge for them just from an RPI standpoint because now they're finally out of the danger zone.
Yeah.
They're out of the danger zone. They're at 53.
Mm-hmm.
Still 11,
still not
12.
In the safe zone, but
exactly. They're still kind of in the friend zone. Yeah. They're where they don't want to be.
No.
But Jim, if they lost either of those games Sunday, they were toast.
Yeah. Because like I was saying on Twitter last night, they're not in, but this keeps them at the they're still at the dinner table. They're still in the conversation.
I'll tell you, so, I would not want to face them as a 3 seed in a regional.
Yeah, I wouldn't be excited about it. I mean, you know, they kind of, if Corey Wilder can throw enough strikes, I mean, we know he's got really good stuff. He's got a great arm.
I wouldn't want to face him. I wouldn't want to be a 2 seed.
I wouldn't want to take my chances on facing him.
On the one game where Corey Wilder threw strikes.
Especially if you're holding your ace for trying to get the 1 seed on Saturday, and then
you can't.
You come out with your number 2 or number 3 or whoever, and Corey Wilder is on that day. Yeah, you could be in trouble. I mean,
the guys I like for NC State also that make them dangerous to me are Ryan Williamson when he's good, which he's mm-hmm. been very uneven this year, and Kurt Britt. So they have these two middle relievers. Kurt Britt was a former Gamecock. They certainly use him, but his father, Tommy, long time, kind of, I wouldn't say legendary because he actually existed, but long time, very successful high school coach at Scotland County in North Carolina. I believe he coached Brent Butler, the big league infielder. But Tommy Britt, longtime coach, passed away last offseason suddenly. And when he died, Kurt Britt applied to transfer, a hardship transfer. So he didn't sit out a year. He's had some arm issues for NC State, but he's good.
Mm-hmm.
This is a big, durable-bodied sinker baller. He gives them an extra weapon. Johnny Piedmont gives them a decent guy. They have the pitching depth
mm-hmm.
to win a regional, Jim.
And their bullpen was kind of the unsung group of that doubleheader yesterday. I mean, they had to lean on those guys in both games. I think in the first game, Wilder had to come out in like the fifth. And then the second game, Johnny Piedmont or Piedmonte, whichever it is.
I think it's Piedmont. I wish it were Piedmonte, but I think it's Johnny Piedmont.
But anyway, he had to come out after 4. So, I mean, you know, and that game goes 10 innings. I mean, Tommy DeJunis is the other guy. I mean, they've kind of really, I mean, he throws 4 scoreless innings yesterday, and he's a guy, we've seen him up to 95 earlier in this year. I think he was more like 92 most of the time yesterday. I kind of wonder if he's,
well, they've
leaned on him a lot.
Well, he's never been a full-time pitcher.
Yeah.
And I think he threw 16 innings as a high school senior, so now he's at 30. So mm-hmm. part of it is that he's gone beyond anything he's ever done before. Number 2, he's a freshman. You know, the intensity. He's learning to manage his intensity a little bit better, Jim. Like, learning to manage. He never failed in high school as a pitcher.
Mm-hmm.
So when he gives up some runs in college, he's still learning how to deal with that. Or okay, you strike out a guy in an inning. Well, now you got to go back out there for the next inning. That's not the kind of stuff he was used to in high school.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And he's dangerous.
Though.
I mean, he was outstanding yesterday. He really had his changeup working. That was a big weapon for him, along with the locating the fastball, which, I mean, so if you can get, they've got some pieces in the bullpen. They've got a lot of young guys in the lineup. I mean, Joe Denan's been coming on. He hits the ball. He's been hitting the ball hard a lot. I mean, he's only hitting 220 or something, but I think he's been better than that shows. And
yeah,
we're all fans of Logan Ratledge here in the BA offices. And
he's a good ball player.
So they put him at shortstop yesterday, which was that's obviously newsworthy from a draft standpoint and just from that team standpoint. I think that's what they've kind of wanted to do from day one. He just had some arm injuries at the start of the season that weren't able to, but. Yeah, I mean, Jake Fincher's a veteran guy. Drake Armstrong draws a big bases-loaded walk off the bench yesterday. So they've got guys like – they've got these young guys and they've got these seniors who are on the Omaha team or right. on the two super regional teams. And, I mean, that's – you know, they've had a lot of close losses. I think, you know, we were talking on Twitter, 0-7 in one-run games until yesterday. So yeah. It says a lot that they've been kind of beaten down in all these – heartbreaking losses they've had, and they've stuck with it. And now if they can, you know, they've got at Wake Forest in two, they're out of conference this week during exams. They play Longwood, but then at Wake Forest, if you can win that series and then just get one against Louisville to end the season, I mean, that gets you right on the cusp. And if they could win that Louisville series, I mean, hey, maybe Louisville won't have anything to play for, you know?
Right.
Maybe they give Kyle Funkhauser a week off or something.
You know? Right, but, you never know.
So, I mean, yeah, if they could win, certainly if they win both, if they win their last three series, I think they'll be in.
The other,
if they win two of the three, then they'll be on the cusp.
The other on-the-cusp ACC teams are Georgia Tech and Notre Dame. Mm-hmm. And Notre Dame, you know, I don't know if they came down to earth or however you want to put it, Jim, but it was kind of like the matchup of very good pitching and defense team versus all in on offense team. Yep. And Notre Dame at Wake Forest and the Demon Deacons, who are on the, you know, kind of on the border, well, they're off the
They
bubble.
Were. They were on the good side of the bubble, and then they went and lost a series to Pittsburgh, which
is a bad idea. Now they come back and win the series against Notre Dame.
Exactly.
And to me, Georgia Tech, I guess, was the one that I still think Notre Dame's in the mix.
Yeah, they'll still be in, but that was.
For now.
Yeah.
I don't think they're secure,
I would say.
It's nothing settled. They've got North Carolina at home. They kind of need to win that series, I think, to really secure themselves. I'm more curious about Georgia Tech. This is just a team that is all over the map. I can't figure this team out. Why has Georgia Tech stopped hitting, number one? And
when they get Kel Johnson back.
Right. And what is who are these guys? I mean, who are these people? I'm just surprised that right now they're kind of remaking themselves as a pitching-oriented team, and I don't, outside of Brandon Gold, I don't see how that's sustainable. Because I'm surprised that Georgia Tech was able to go and win that series, and it was obviously some late heroics in a couple of those games, a couple of close wins for this team, and a guy, Ryan Purefoy, who's kind of become a cult hero for them on Twitter, part-time player, Jim, who is the hero of this series for them.
Exactly. His name plays very well into to hashtags and all that.
It does.
I'm sure Mike Lennon, if he were here, he would love. He would be a big fan of Ryan Purifoy. We'd get some good puns right now.
I think you're right about that.
We're missing that element here today. But, yeah, I mean, that's a team that's been tough to figure out. I mean, how can you get swept by Boston College? I mean, BC's got some arms.
Not just get swept, but they scored one run.
I mean, yeah, that's no bueno.
It was surprising. But, while we're mentioning Boston College, I do want to mention that I've been told by the Boston College coaching staff that the stories I've told about their field are a myth. It's hokum. And it's just tall tales that have been exploded over the years. They resod the field every year after people tailgate on it in the fall. And anything that people say about their ball field like that is casting aspersions on them. So they corrected me on that. I want to let people know that I'm correcting the record. I will never tell those stories again. They resod the field every fall at Commander Shea Field, so let it be known. I did see some good arms out of that Georgia BC team, so I understand how they could win the series, but Georgia Tech is the more... That's a vexing team, and my boy Connor Justice hasn't hit this year. Still feel that that's a team with some ceiling, Jim. Are they in? Are they out? What's your take on them
lost,
right now?
If they lost to Clemson, they'd have been in trouble. They would be in the same boat as Virginia. They would have been 10-14. Instead, they're now 11-13. I mean, they are basically in the same boat as Virginia. They got the high RPI.
Right.
But their conference record is iffy. I mean,
But they have Pittsburgh and Miami left.
Exactly.
So that's a real... have the head-to-head series advantage over Virginia.
They did
win 2 out of 3 in Atlanta against the Cavaliers. So I'm wondering, like, to me, it feels like they... I feel like Virginia is a better team, but at the same time, feel like the path's almost a little bit clearer there for Georgia Tech.
Exactly. They've got the head-to-head over Clemson now. They've got head-to-head over Duke and Notre Dame, some of these other teams that would be kind of in their neighborhood in the standings there. But, if you can sew your 11-30, if you can sweep Pittsburgh week after next, they're another team that's out of conference this weekend, then it should be fine. See, the Miami series, that's one that's going to – Miami's still third in the RPI, which is kind of mystifying in its own right. But so that's one of those series that doesn't hurt you even if you lose. So you can go 4-2 the rest of the way. They'll be in regionals. I don't think there's too much to worry about. But, I mean, this is the same team that lost. Got swept by Boston College, so you never know. I mean, Pittsburgh did beat Wake, so they're
right.
At least you have to take them – seriously, at least to an extent.
I'll tell you who
for a 16-25 team. Yeah.
I'll tell you who we don't have to take seriously anymore as an at-large team, and that's the Texas Longhorns, Jim.
Indeed.
I'm switching gears to the Big 12, but
that conference.
TFCO. The ACC and the SEC. The SEC's got a little bit more depth, I think, than the Atlantic Coast Conference does, or a lot more depth.
Yeah, the SEC could be up to 10. I think I had them in 8 bids last week. They certainly could max out at 10.
But the ACC is definitely a top-heavy league, but the Big 12, that's the real top-heavy league. We thought it would be four teams that would separate themselves. It is. It's four regional teams, really, Jim. It looks like a four-bid league.
It might be less than that.
TCU, Oklahoma, Texas Tech are kind of on that bubble, Jim, and I'm not sure either of these teams has really made the case. We have a question on the Twitter from Johnny Baseball at Web Dingus. Do you see Oklahoma baseball making the tournament? Thanks very much. You're welcome. But Oklahoma, again, they're tied with TCU for second in the league. Just a half game back of Oklahoma State. But Jim, it really looks like Oklahoma State and TCU have separated themselves. TCU with a very impressive sweep of Texas this weekend. Oklahoma State goes and takes care of business, wins that series against Texas Tech. Those two teams are the class of the league, and everybody else is kind of fighting for scraps right now. It feels like as far as regional bids go.
Exactly. I mean, it's a distinct possibility this could only be a two-bid league. I mean, Oklahoma and Texas Tech are no sure things. I mean, given where their RPIs are, it's kind of mystifying their RPIs are so bad. I mean, their records seem fine. They're good conference records, but, I mean, they're way – I mean, on Warren Nolan here, Texas Tech is 67, Oklahoma is 76. They've got
I can't figure that out.
It is kind of mystifying how they're that far down, but the Texas Tech needed that series at home. I mean, they had home series against both TCU and Oklahoma State, couldn't win either of them. They needed one of those. I mean, they haven't won a weekend series against a regional team all year. I don't think. I mean, their best thing they've done is they went out and won a series at San Diego State, but they were kind of a borderline regional team for a while, but they've fallen off. The Aztecs have, so
that really is their best series.
That's really the best thing they've done. I mean, actually, maybe the next best thing they've done is that start of the year they swept San Francisco, who's actually been one of the better teams turned out to be one of the better teams in the West Coast Conference. But
and the head to head, they lost at Oklahoma. They lost to
other one. They lost to the Sooners. So I mean, their conference resume. I mean, they beat the lower teams. They beat Kansas. They beat Baylor. They beat K-State, which
was on the road.
I mean, it was on the road. But, it's – now they finished the year at Texas and at West Virginia. If they can go 5-1 as well and not screw up in these two midweek games against Grand Canyon. But
yeah, if they can that's go, where they are. I mean, that's where they are right now.
Since though Texas and West Virginia, obviously, they're not great, but they are still in the top 100. So if you can go – win both a series, like I said, maybe go 5-1. If you can sweep one of them, then that gets them back in the good graces here. But
and for Oklahoma, Jim, this might just come down to the Bedlam series. Their whole
really
season, they've got TCU at home to end. I don't think you can expect to win that series. I wouldn't want to try to play TCU right now. That team just is such a machine on the mound. They're so consistent, Jim, on the mound. Granted, they still struggle to grind out runs, but I wouldn't want to play TCU. I mean,
no.
I just feel like Coach Schlossnagel has those guys. And Coach Sarlos, I'm a Kirk Sarlos guy. I always have been from his Titans days, but that team throws a billion strikes. And for the most part, they do it. I know Alexander's not a huge power arm, and Morrison obviously is a low slot guy, but Alex Young and Mitch Traver throw kind of hard.
Mm-hmm.
Those guys throw a billion strikes. I wouldn't want to get in their bullpen either. Is this the best pitching staff in the country, in your mind, TCU?
Yeah, probably. I would think they're certainly up there. Them or Louisville, I think, would be the, or Vandy would probably be the, those are probably the three, first three that jump to mind. But
I think from a pro standpoint, I'd give the edge to Vandy, but I think from a college standpoint, I'm giving the edge to TCU.
That's probably the best way to put it.
They just don't beat themselves as a pitching staff. Mm-hmm. You know, just, we were just talking about NC State. NC State has 200 walks as a staff. You know how many TCU has? 84. 84 walks as a team. They have quality arms who throw a ton of strikes. And that's a great formula. They're basically averaging 2 walks per 9 as a staff. And in this college era, unless you really bring the lumber and beat them, they're not going to beat themselves. They don't beat themselves a lot on defense. They're fielding close to 980. And they're athletic. They run the ball down the outfield. It is not an exciting, kind of team you write home about. But to me, they're extremely dangerous to get to Omaha.
And they're a team that's built to win in their ballpark, too. It's going to make them really tough to beat in the postseason.
And if they get to TD Ameritrade, they're going to be very good there. Mm-hmm. That, they're the kind of team that could UCLA 2013 you to sleep in Omaha.
Yeah.
And I just would not – if they got there, I would not want to see – I wouldn't want to face them if I were an offensive-minded club. I'm impressed. They're just like a metronome. They're just so consistent week in, week out.
They had that one bad weekend at K-State, which kind of which set them back. I mean, I was doing the Fields of 64 for that. It was hard to – like, I wanted to make them a national seed, but they're sitting there at 7-5 in the Big 12 of having lost that series where they – I mean, everybody has a bad weekend. I said, well, that was theirs. I think Young and Traver kind of had – just had bad outings for whatever reason against the Wildcats, and so that kind of set them back. And plus, I mean, they did lose the head-to-head series to the Cowboys, so that's kind of why I had Oklahoma State giving them the edge there. But now they go and sweep the Longhorns, second straight year they've done that, and now they're 10-5 looks a lot better than 7-5 did. So that was, they've had the RPI all along to be a national seed, and now they're up there. Even if they can just, I mean, they still probably need to at least get a share of the Big 12 title to be a national seed. I wouldn't feel great if they finished in second.
That wouldn't hurt.
But they should. I mean, you figure they'll probably get a national seed. I mean, their schedule's not daunting down the stretch here.
I don't believe
maybe
so
that
either.
Trip to Norman, but I mean, that's winnable.
I feel like that's winnable. Is Oklahoma going to get in, Jim? What's your take? If you're a betting man.
That's a tough one.
That's the toughest one. I feel like
them and Texas Tech are both so tough to peg whether they'll get in or not.
They got so dominated in that midweek game by Oklahoma State. That's
that
in
left
my head.
A mark.
It really did. That said, if this is the kind of thing where Pete Hughes kind of coach team kind of goes in with that chip on their shoulder. I do feel like losing this weekend to Sam Houston State
was
a red flag.
That was a bad idea.
it's like bad idea jeans, the old Saturday Night Live commercial. I figure I'm in Haiti once, why use a condom? It's one of my all-time favorite fake commercials. Did you really feel like this could be a two-bid league, Jim? I mean,
it's possible. I mean,
that would be shocking.
Oklahoma, I mean, if they can win one of these series here with Oklahoma State and TC, if they can win one of those, they'll maybe go win a couple games in the Big 12 tournament. That might be enough to get them in. I mean, obviously, their conference. It's so weird to have. Both those teams, the Sooners and Red Raiders, both so strong in the standings. It's weird that RPIs are so bad. But then you look. I mean, Oklahoma is 2-7 against the top 50. I mean, it's not going to cut it. And they haven't really done anything. Well, I guess they lost the series to Baylor. I mean, that hurts them. And if they gotta get with it here. I mean, but neither of those two have any room for error. If they backslide any further, then that could just be a two-bid league or maybe three if a non-TCU or Oklahoma State wins the tournament.
It's the Baseball America College Podcast with Jim Schoenert. I'm John Manuel. Jim, some Pac-12 doings of note, then we want to talk a little AAC. I guess this weekend, really the big news in the Pac-12 was Oregon State finally getting that series win against a ranked team. We still didn't rank the Beavers. still can't get them in the top 25. But the O-State Ballers did beat USC. Kind of surprised that USC, I'm blank on his name, is it Bobby Taylor, is that his name, who they started Friday?
Oh, yeah.
They moved up.
Gilbert, I think, was his name.
Taylor Gilbert.
Yeah.
That's him. Moved him up to Friday, and he pitched very well.
I think
he had double-digit really strikeouts in that game, over 7 innings.
Tyler Gilbert, yep.
Tyler Gilbert had some reports on Tyler of, in pass starts, he's bumping 93. Mm-hmm. You know, pitches with a firm fastball, pitches off the fastball. Sounds like Kyle Toomey's kind of going a little south lately for the Trojans. The Beavers got to their bullpen, won a game late on Saturday, then kind of led wire to wire on Sunday. Seems like that's, you know, the Beavers and Cal were the two big series this
Cal
weekend.
That's the team that really kind of saved their bacon this weekend. That was a team that...
Bacon.
We had said Bacon Night over at Chapel
Bacon
Hill.
Night was
exactly.
Bacon Night at USC. Again, where's Mike Linnea when we need him?
It was funny. I don't want to get sidetracked.
You can get sidetracked.
I was watching, as I was working on Top 25 Tracker last night, I had Mythbusters on in the background, and they did the Simpsons special episode. So that slowed me down while I was doing Tracker.
Mythbusters just about the Simpsons?
Yeah, it's a whole episode about the Simpsons.
That's outstanding. I'm writing that down for future. I'll find that on the YouTube.
But, I lost my train of thought.
We were talking about bacon.
Oh, yes.
We were talking about
bacon,
Cal,
yes. If you go and sweep Arizona, I mean, I see Arizona, kind of like you tweeted last night, that's a team that's got talent in the lineup, but just hasn't got it together. I mean, their pitching can be had, is the way to put it.
It absolutely can be had.
But, that was huge for Cal. I mean, Cal had been backsliding. I mean, you lose series to Stanford, and they lost to Washington State. I mean, that kind of...
Speaking of being had.
Yeah.
that's when you're being had, when you're losing to those
teams.
You can't
lose. I mean, so this was a huge weekend for them. Their RPI is up to back in the top 50. They're back in good shape. I won't say great shape, but they're back in good shape. They still have, you know, they have an early series win against Irvine, so that looks pretty good. That series loss to Duke is still not helping them out, but...
It's not. I talked to a scout, just today, Jim, talking about some... stuff out west, and one of the things that he talked about was just how much this team missed Dalton Jeffries.
Mm-hmm.
Because what Dalton Jeffries does is, even when his velocity is not as good as it was early in the year, he's still in the low 90s, and it's easy 92, it's easy 93 with sink, life down. He's a true Friday guy, and he just really helps set the table. And they pitched well this weekend. Mm-hmm. You know, Ryan Mason is a steady, tall sinker baller, generally, you know, hasn't given up a home run all year, keeps the ball in the ballpark. That's kind of the, you know, that's the way Cal's going to have to pitch this year.
And they got a legitimate lineup for sure.
It is.
Urseg and Chris Paul and those guys.
It's a legit lineup. Urseg is, the game where they beat James Kaprielian. Mm-hmm. Urseg had the game-winning home run in that game, went deep on a breaking ball that Kaprielian missed his location with. And they gave up four runs on weekend to an Arizona team that Jim is, noted for its offense. I mean, if you're going to point out one thing about Arizona, you're going to point at the top of their lineup with Kingery, Newman, Dahlbeck, Riley Moore. You know, that's their MO. And, the fact that Cal was really able to hold them down, which is very impressive. Five solid innings from Matt Ladrich on Sunday in the capper. And it's a huge series sweep for Cal. So, I've kind of been on the Bears bandwagon all year. It was a little bit getting harder and harder, Jim, to stay on that bandwagon.
Yeah, losing at home to Washington State that turned you off him.
How would that do that? They still have a tough schedule ahead. Arizona State at home. They got USC at home. They got to finish up at Oregon State.
In the middle of that, they fly across the country to come to camp.
We're looking forward to that one, no doubt about it. I love that the local times are all Pacific times. So an 11 a.m. start for them on the Saturday game because, of course, Campbell doesn't play on Sundays.
Yep.
But to me, it feels like if Cal can even go 4-5 in those series, if not 5-4, that's a regional team.
That should do it. Yeah, I mean, all these games they have left, every single game they have left is a top 100 team. Campbell's 90th right now, so maybe, you know, they may not end up being there. But so right now, that's a very amenable schedule to get, you know, to building up a strong RPI. If they can win, if they can just go 4-5, maybe win one of those series, They should be in fine shape to get in there somewhere.
All five of those Pac-12 teams are in the top 15 RPI, like you said. It feels like there's a real set. That's the least gray area conference
exactly.
Right now, with Oregon State and Cal having won this weekend. The most gray area conference might be the AAC, Jim.
Yeah, we need to get Vince Lara in here for this
one. Now, Vince is our American.
Mr. AAC there.
He is. And then Mike was there in Greenville, G-Vegas, as you said. And that's the hottest team in the league. But we ranked the Memphis Tigers of Coach Darren Schoenrock. And this has been the steadiest team, Jim. This league is really tough to figure. Seven teams in the top 55 in RPI. And at seventh is the team that we had ranked most of the year, and UCF. But TFCO for UCF.
They might be toast.
I think the Golden Knights lack, what was earlier like a weakness, their pitching staff. Mm-hmm. I think eventually it just seemed like they kind of crumbled under the pressure of the offense always having to deliver, and lost the series at Tulane last weekend, then swept this weekend. Three straight one-run losses to the Pirates. How many of the Pirates' wins this week were walk-off? I think
those NC State and Duke games might have both been walk off games. I know the first one was. So yeah, that's about as an exciting week as you can have.
So UCF still has two series with South Florida left.
That's kind of
sandwiched around Memphis. It's a little strange to see that on a schedule, but that's what I see on the Warren Nolan schedule. So I'm looking forward to. To a little home and home with the Bulls. But why Memphis? Why do we rank Memphis? What stands out about Memphis, and what's kind of been their MO this year?
Well, it seems like they're a pretty balanced team. I mean, they kind of remind me of Kentucky a little bit. They're not dominant in any one real category, but they obviously need to look at, this is their body of work. I mean, they've won games against all the other, you look at all the other teams, they obviously. The bad news first is they lost the series to Cincinnati.
Right.
That's not good.
Let's get that out of the way.
Yeah, let's get the bad news there first. But they've won series against East Carolina, Houston, USF, and now at UConn. A couple of those on the UConn and ECU series on the road. So they've beaten all the other good AAC teams they've played. Some of these midweek games, they split two midweek games with Arkansas. They split a couple midweek games with the Ole Miss Rebels. They beat Mississippi State, which looked decent at the time. Not so much anymore, but still. Right. Win over an SEC team, which is nice to have. They've got a nice little body of work, and they took two games from Middle Tennessee State, who was kind of up there, one of the top teams in Conference USA. So, I mean, they've got a nice little body of work there. They haven't really done, other than that one week against Cincinnati, they haven't screwed up too much. They haven't done much wrong. So, I mean, that's just kind of that was my... My push for getting them in there was just the consistency they've had. The one misstep. They've been really consistent. They've won at home. They've won on the road. They've done a lot of good things.
They really have. And to me, when I think of this program, I always think of the fact that Coach Schoenrock was the pitching coach for a long time at Mississippi State with Ron Polk, and he's done a really nice job as the head coach at Memphis. There was a year or two where they got into regionals where we didn't think they deserved to get in, but they have been consistent as a program. They're almost always in it. They're almost always in whatever conference they're in. They're in that race. And they've been very good and very consistent at developing pitching. This year it's been Dylan Toscano, cutter guy, upper 80s, fastball. There's a lot of cutters. He's been very consistent for them in the weekend rotation. Caleb Wallingford's the only guy who's really gone to the post every weekend for them. But yeah, to me, Jim, the key with Memphis is they're just very consistent strike throwers. They've got guys like Wallingford and Toscano, upper 80s fastballs guys, throw a lot of cutters, and they keep themselves in games. They haven't been hammered on the mound. This is like a lot of games where AAC teams have really gotten to them pitching-wise on the mound. So they've stayed in every game.
Exactly, and they don't beat themselves. They're up there, and they've got they're up there in the top 30 in RP and ERA in the country. They're 3.18. They're a solid fielding team. They're not flashy, but they just don't beat themselves. And in college baseball, that's really the name of the game. Really, you don't beat yourself, you're going to win most of the time.
And East Carolina not beating itself, but also making some of those plays to win some of these games lately, Jim, in the AAC. It's been a little bit of a surprise. Last thing we should talk about before we go and do this Skype call. is the Big Ten. We've been talking about them all year, Jim. Feel like we kind of need to talk about them again. Really got to respect that Ohio State keeps getting it done. This weekend, they swept Northwestern at Northwestern. And that's really the stunning part to me, is that Ohio State's RPI is the highest of any of these teams in the Big Ten. I mean, even higher than Illinois, which has won, what now, 17 games in a row?
17.
Now, I've been in touch with the Illinois coaching staff. They say they can. They've had an on-site inspection from the NCAA. They can host on-site. They do need to bring in more seating. But the press box, other things, that they meet the requirements. They need to bring in more seating. Maybe they need to put a few more W's in their Twitter handle. But with this win streak,
I wonder where your limit is. Your Twitter has a limit on how long your name can be.
That's a good
question.
Might
be running out there.
They probably are. This is a team that's probably going to host now. I have to imagine.
Yeah, if they win the regular season title, you have to believe they will. You got to figure whoever wins this regular season title probably will. I mean, you know that Ohio State can. I mean, Ohio State has the highest RPI, like you said. They're number 12 here. So if they, they play Illinois this week, that is a huge series. Whoever wins that, is probably going to have an inside track to be a host. Iowa is obviously still in the mix too. So I mean, whoever comes out on top of those three teams is probably going to be playing at home in Maryland, still in the mix as well. If they can finish strong. They did lose a head-to-head series to Iowa. The Terps did, but they're still in this mix too. So I mean, any one of those teams can get their way up there.
So Joe Healy had emailed us at podcast@baseballamerica.com. Want to know about Illinois hosting. So there's the news there. Illinois will host on campus, Joe. So if they're going to host, it will be on campus. Joe had asked if they could go elsewhere. He also wanted to know about the committee. They have a resume that clearly makes them a national seed. Have them travel as a one seed in regionals to a place like Missouri State or Arkansas makes sense, but that's obviously not an option in super regionals. I do think that is something that you could have seen, or you still could see, with one of these Big Ten teams. For example, Illinois. They do seem, even if they could host on campus, I think Joe has a point. You could see Arkansas be a two seed and host when they're drawing 12,000. They generally don't like to do that anymore, but
I feel like I've gotten away from.
I don't think they do that anymore. I agree.
I feel like the only way. The only way two seeds host anymore is if a team just doesn't have the facilities and doesn't have an option. Like we've talked about a little bit with UCSB. They don't have lights, so they couldn't host. So if they unless they're able to hook up with a Cal League team somewhere, they would have to travel if they get a one seed. But yeah, it feels like the committee does stick to merit as far as being a one seed and getting to host.
I agree. The other question we had from Paul Norwine also sent us some notes from the weekend series about Purdue, one of our other Big Ten fans. He asked if we thought that Northwestern's pitching coach and fellow NC State alumnus of yours, Jim, Tim Stoddard, was a candidate for the opening. Tim has been the pitching coach at Northwestern for a long time. And the whole big question is what will happen with Northwestern, with Paul Stevens retiring. Is Northwestern going to put some money into baseball like the rest of the Big Ten is, or not? Because if they do, they need a facility upgrade, they need to spend a lot more money on coaching salary, and they need to decide whether they want to do like a lot of these other private schools, Jim, and really work their endowment to bring in players on these endowment financial needs / academic scholarships like a lot of teams like Vanderbilt do and stretch their scholarship dollars. I don't believe that Northwestern's ever been fully funded. But there's big leaguers from Northwestern, whether you're talking about George Contos, my boy, George Contos, or Jay Happ. Northwestern has produced players back in the day, Mark Loretta. Paul Stevens produced big leaguers, but never consistent winners. So I think I'm guessing that if Northwestern decides to spend more and make more of a commitment to baseball, they would totally change gears. Maybe Tim Stoddard would be an assistant coach still, but I can't imagine that he'd become the head coach after all these years as an assistant. Northwestern 4-11 in the league, and that's the real issue to me, Jimmer, with the Big Ten. Nebraska got swept this weekend by Iowa, real big hit to their regional chances in my mind. I don't care that their RPI is 20. Yeah, I think they're in trouble.
Yeah, they're sitting there at 6-9. I mean, I think their schedule is open up the next couple weeks. I think they play a couple of the bottom teams, but now they're looking at. I mean, we've got three series left. They've got to win them all. That's really the bottom line.
That's it. They don't have any margin for error. They're at Northwestern, home to Purdue, at Illinois. So
they've
got
the
two
key.
Easier ones, but they're going to have to go to Illinois and win a game.
They
got to
win. Yeah, they obviously got to go 5-1 at least the next 2 weeks, and then you got to at least win one game, and you might have to win that series at Illinois.
You don't want to have put yourself in that position.
No.
Michigan State, Jim, the RPI is 31. They've got Purdue, Penn State, at Minnesota remaining. Their RPI is going to come down as they play all these teams. Could Michigan State play its way into an at-large bid now?
I think they definitely can. I mean, look how well. If you look at how well they're playing lately, and they've they've been pretty consistent. They've, you know, obviously had that. They go out and sweep that series at Oregon, which
doesn't hurt.
Yeah, I mean, at the time we thought it might have said more about Oregon, but hey, Michigan State's actually pretty good, and now they've so they're 9-6 in the Big Ten. If they can, I don't know if they finish. If they do stay in sixth place, that might be a little dangerous. Probably want to at least get ahead of the Wolverines that are sitting there ahead of them. But I mean, they've certainly got the RPI for it. They've got a lot of. You look at their. They've got a good.
They have one three-game losing streak all year. Mm-hmm. It was at UCLA. So if you're gonna get, if you're gonna have a three-game losing streak against anybody, have it be at the number one team in the country in the RPI.
Mm-hmm. I mean, their top 100 record is solid. Their road record's solid. So they've got some good indicators there. Obviously, the RPI is starting point for all this, and that's up
there.
The
metrics are good.
Their metrics are good.
I like their club. I like just how every year this is what Jake Boss's teams do. They grind. They go out west. They play good teams. They don't beat themselves. They don't get swept. It's really a very steady formula for Michigan State. I have a lot of respect for that program.
Yeah, well, looking at the schedule, home against Purdue and Penn State. That's not good. You need to
from an RPI standpoint.
From an RPI standpoint, probably have to sweep both those. Yeah, home against Purdue. That's when you play the bad teams. You want to play them on the road. This is not good.
That's a great point. You want to play them on the road. I'm just impressed by the fact that when they played Ohio State, they got a win. Mm-hmm. When they played Illinois, they got a win. So I've just been very impressed by Cam Gibson and the Michigan State crew. We probably need to wrap up this podcast. We've gone over an hour. So for Jim Schoeder, I'm John Manuel. We'll be back next week with another Baseball America podcast. So long, everybody.